ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC AFL Daily Podcast time, and the biggest week on the AFL home and away calendar is in the books, completed. The Anzac Appeal Round, highlighted by Anzac Day yesterday between Essendon and Collingwood. Ben Cameron along for the ride as always, and our favourite on a Sunday evening, Daniel Harford. Half, good to have you in.
Benny, great to be with you and everyone. Love this weekend of footy. Lots going on. Some unbelievable weather around the country just makes it even better.
And we love Sunday night because we do our Sunday night takeaways, Half. And really, tonight, we've got to launch with a disastrous weekend, really, for the umpires and the lawmakers of our game. It hasn't been a good one. I was at Docklands earlier today when St Kilda took on the West Coast Eagles. Play went on for over a minute, Half. The ball went from the kick-in to the pocket to the halfback flank up to the wing. There was a throw-in. Then play was stopped. And we said, surely this can't be happening. What on earth is happening? And we went all the way back to the apparent mark that Rowan Marshall had taken. And he had a shot on goal and kicked it. And it was the arc intervening. This can't be happening, surely.
This isn't the way it was meant to be. This isn't the situation that should have been occurring. The arc was supposed to save the howl, a bit like DRS in the world of cricket for those fans out there. But it wasn't supposed to be reviewing things a minute down the track and trying to work out whether or not they were in or out. That doesn't make any sense. Now, I know in the end, St Kilda fans will sit there and say, possibly, that hang on a second, we were robbed of a chance of a goal, which Ron Marshall eventually went back and kicked. So why would you deny us that if that was the right outcome? But when we're dealing with millimetres and cameras behind posts, you actually can't see the full system situation anyway. I'm not sure that's what the arc was meant for. But that's the poster boy moment for this week, which is quite ironic because there's been a couple of howlers all the way through. And for that to be the poster boy suggests that we've got a hell of a lot of work to do in the arc. It's my half series for the week too, because it's one of the things that we cannot have affect the game. Because we talk about the fan engagement and continuity and keeping the game flowing. This is exactly what the AFL have been talking about for years, let alone the last couple of months. And under the new regime of Greg Swan and co at AFL HQ, that we can't have a situation where the game is played for an extra minute and then we are stripped back to the moment that supposedly was misguided or misjudged. And we play from there. That's not the way the game's ever been played, nor should it ever be played. So that's something that headquarters absolutely has to sort out in the next little while. It's become a bit of a farce. The boundary line interactions with the arc is something else that doesn't need to be a part of the game. Last disposal we've touched on before, Benny. It should be last disposal, not last touch. We don't need forensic analysis of it. Let's just play the game and just take out the howlers. That's what it's for. Keep it simple. Get it right. And let's get this game back on track.
And you're just half serious. I like it from you, Half, once again, nailing your half serious. Absolutely right. Farcical, comical, any of those words you wish to attach to it. That's what we were feeling at the time, having seen it. Marcus Windhager was out there. He joined us post-game. This is what he had to say about it.
Yeah, that was bizarre. I don't know what I thought of it. I was on the bench at the time. We were all confused. Had no idea what was going on, but I didn't think that was even possible that you could go back about 2 minutes and play. But we'll take it. Free snag for Big Row.
We've seen a little bit of it with the arc and the last touch rule. Do you feel clear as a player on what they can and can't bring back?
Yeah, it's sort of, if you're going back to the centre bounce, that feels like it's play on, like going back to the goal square and having a kick in if it was touch. But God, that felt like you can't go back that long. Like the play had gone out for about a minute, felt a bit weird. So yeah, I don't know what I think of it. Leave it to the umpires and the AFL.
So I put the clock on at half when I got back to the studio to get ready for this. 66 seconds was how long I marked it at. So my questions are, what happens if the Eagles went coast to coast and kicked a goal? Is that goal then annulled and we have to go back and Rowan Marshall has the shot? What happens to the disposals? What happens to the lost time? What if it's then a close game? Say it takes 23 seconds next time and then we decide, oh no, we're going back. And then in the dying stages of the game, a team is going forward, time expires and they're down by 5 points and we've just lost that time in the game. There are so many.
Yeah. So what?
It's a can of worms.
That's a good question. And what is the limit? What is the time limit before it's not stripped back? It's absolutely right. What if it's 4 minutes And the Ark are still trying to find it out. And so much has happened in that time. Think of the poor folk at Chepidata, who have to take away all the stats, Benny. What about the poor folk who are trying to press the buttons
well, I think
and give
they,
us all the numbers that we love in the water?
I think they leave the data. So I think the disposals that happen in the interim still stay as statistics in part of the game. The time doesn't go back on half. So I processing this in real time today.
You can't have 66 seconds of play that didn't effectively happen be counted, can you?
Well, they don't put the time back on the clock. It's got...
Well, we need to sort that out. It's
got warts all over it half. So I essentially came to... We need to decide on one of three conclusions. Either we are happy to accept that it's the goal umpire is going to make the call and they might get it wrong from time to time and we just live with that and we move on. Or we hold up the game whenever there's one that's close and we say, look, the game is stopping. That's gone through for behind. We needed to see whether Rowe had marked that or it was through for a behind, or we allot a certain period of time. And once it goes past, say, 20 seconds, if they haven't brought it back, too late. The game is moving on and the toothpaste is out of the tube.
Well, normally in those situations, though, that's why I found it so funny today. Normally in those situations where there is a real line ball decision to make from a goal umpiring or boundary umpire perspective, they would come together, they would convene, the umpire would take the ball and they'd have a look. Well, my question is, why didn't that happen on that occasion? That seemed like a really clear-cut example of, we're going to check this before we do anything else, which they've done plenty of times before.
It was very strange being there. Now, this was all on the back of a bad weekend already, seemingly, and I'm saying for the lawmakers or the umpires I think the umpires are often officiating within the laws that they are given. So my early understanding from the information I've been given today is that what the umpires did today was absolutely within the rules and within the laws of the game that we have at the moment. The question I'm posing, and I think you are as well, Half, is should it be? And the same goes for the Ben Miller, Max Gawn situation when on Friday night they run past Brody Myercheck and Ben Miller is called to stand. He doesn't believe he's in the marking contest. He's just trailing his man. And the umpire says, no, you needed to stand and let Max Gawn run off.
No, well, that's the stupidest rule in footy, the whole protected area rule. That needs a total overhaul as far as I'm concerned. Players that aren't affecting the contest, you've got to be able to keep them out. And if you come too close, you cop the 50. And I think most players and fans and anyone that's watching the game would accept that because we all understand the premise of the law and what they're trying to do. And I'm a bit with you, but with the umpires, I mean, they're given the laws, which are very, very grey and vague at times, to interpret on any given moment. And so they're going to get some wrong, but they're working within the framework and the parameters they've been given. So I actually give them a bit of an out in a lot of this stuff. I think it's got to go back to the lawmakers to make it really clear. Or if it's not clear, we have to find a way to make it more free-flowing or give the umpires the power of discretion to do whatever the hell they like. And err on the side of let it go would be my suggestion. Just err on the side of it, let it go. Because if it's not impacting the game, there's no reason to stop it or provide a penalty to any given team for any supposed infraction against the rules. That whole protected area thing, it's been a disaster since day one. Nobody really understands it. Nobody can measure it properly. I mean, we talked about this yesterday on the Saturday preview and the build-up to Anzac Day at the MCG, that the umpires have got to learn how to measure 10 metres from the bloke on the mark. They can't work out 15 metres in kicks these days. They go 7 or they go 30 and they're not paid sometimes on those occasions. So take the challenge, take the really difficult part of being an umpire away from them and just let them officiate the contest.
So the way I was sold that rule is that if you're in the marking contest and if there's multiple people going up, someone has to stand. So they're arguing because Ben Miller was running through that protected area, he should have had to have stood in that moment.
But he wasn't a part of the marking contest.
That's exactly right. So my point would be there, he's not a part of the marking contest, so you've got to let him go. I think what a lot of this gets back to as well, Half, is that the AFL make rule changes hoping for an outcome, which they want their Sharon freed up. So they want the player on the mark standing still.
Yep.
So it's like netball, and so it's effectively 17 on 18. The team with the ball has 18. The team defending has 17. They're hoping this gets the ball moving. I can feed the handball to the guy running by. They're already gone. Man on the mark can't stop them. The Sharon's in motion. We get the big scores we have.
And they've got their wish because, as you say, we're scoring freely.
So all of that. But none of that is really communicated well or explained. So the fans don't understand it. The rules are written in a certain way. The fans don't really understand the laws. The umpires are left as a sort of middleman to try and officiate it. And everyone's confused. So I think that's part of the problem.
Couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. Like, and that classic example of being a part of the marking contest and having to stand. No worries. I think we've all got that. And there's been a couple of indiscretions through the year, but I think all the players, all the fans are sort of on board with that. But the Miller one was just bizarre. Like, he wasn't even anywhere near the marking contest, just following his opponent past the contest. You're entitled to do that. You don't have to stand in that situation. So the rule says. This is the problem. So the rule says. So sometimes the umpires get it wrong. Other times the lawmakers are making it very, very difficult for the umpires to do their job. And I think that's bordering on unfair, I must admit. Where are the AFL Umpires Association in all this? We hear the Players Association kick up a fuss when there's things against the umpires and the Players and the Coaches Association coming out when there's issues with coaching in the game. What are the Umpires Association talking about this and taking a stand on this?
It is the most emotional topic in football. So hopefully we've provided a little bit of analysis in amongst all of that half, but we'll leave the umpiring there and jump to some of the footy. And yesterday afternoon, the Anzac Day match and the match before that down in Hobart brings us to the first of our takeaways across these two games, which is that the older players are playing better for longer than ever before. And I speak of Scott Pendlebury and Jack Gunston, who, let's start with Scott Pendlebury, at 38, was playing his 19th Anzac Day match, won his 4th Anzac Day medal, and had a career-high disposals output of 43, and Jack Gunston booted 5 goals to be second in the Coleman medal race. Why are better players playing for longer than ever before?
I'll tell you why, because they're better players. They get the game, and this is an era of speed and athleticism as opposed to ball use, skill, understanding the game. And those two guys are standouts in that. Like Pendlebury, on Saturday was off the charts. Like, he just understands exactly what's going to happen in the next two or three phases of play and positions himself accordingly to dictate, like a conductor to the orchestra, and just make the music happen. Like, he's a wizard. He's so good to watch. And I don't think there's any danger of him falling behind the game because of the roles that he plays, but also how smart he is and the way he positions himself on the ground at any given time. He's not fast anymore, Scott. No. He was never that electric to start with, but he's an unbelievable preparer, but he just gets the game. He's able to truck along all day at the same speed. He has that ability to evade and get out of trouble and just buy another meter every now and then, which creates all the opportunity to create that next phase of play for Collingwood. And he's the best at it. And I don't see him slowing down anytime soon. I was talking with my son yesterday on the couch as we were watching. He goes, there's no reason, he's 19, there's no reason why he can't play another year. He could play 460 games the way he's going. He could get to 500 the way he's going. Like, there's no reason Scott Pendlebury should walk out of the game because of the impact he's having at the moment.
No, he absolutely might go past 450 at least. I mean, that looks very real at the moment. 5 on the bench, maybe allowing them to play a little longer as well, Huff?
Do you remember the conversation, Benny, when we brought in the interchange cap?
Yeah.
And everyone was saying, oh, it's going to be the end of the long-term player and 300 games is going to be a pipe dream. And yesterday's sort of a scenario, it won't happen anymore because the game's too tough on these players and they won't be able to deal with the pressure and the load. Well, that's been proven to be an absolute fallacy too. We get very emotional and very carried away with some of our statements in AFL footy. And Pendlebury's a classic example. And as you said, Jack Gunston, again, the smartest forward in the competition. He's not the most athletic. He's pretty athletic for a guy at his age. But he reads the plays. They've set up a bit of a system effectively for him because he knows how to move into the space, how to body up his opponent, how to get in behind, how to push up at the right time and be that lead-up player. He's the smartest forward in the competition. And as a result, Hawthorn are getting terrific benefit from a guy that possibly could have been pensioned off a couple of years ago.
Well, when he came back from Brisbane, it looked like he was done. It felt like this was a little nice farewell tour for Jack Gunston, but it's been far better than that. I think he and Gary Lyon picked this up really early on in the season. The new rules suit Jack Gunston down to the ground. I mean, he is a leading for separation forward, so the quicker ball movement suits him beautifully. They won by 52 points, the Hawks, over the Gold Coast Suns, and that was a big win to make it 11 straight at York Park. The Gold Coast Suns have conceded over 100 points in their last 4 games. The Essendon and Collingwood game as well, Half, 77 points, the biggest ever Anzac Day margin. Just quickly, where do you stand on potentially sharing around Anzac Day? Or are you always staunch that it needs to be Essendon and Collingwood?
I think they've done a great job, Essendon and Collingwood. I know that a lot of clubs would love the opportunity to play on Anzac Day and be a part of that amazing spectacle and commemoration of such a great day in Australian history and such an important day in Australian history every single year, the best day on the calendar. I understand they want to do that, but I think what Essendon and Collingwood do, I know there's games interstate that get there a little fill, but what Essendon and Collingwood do, what they've done for the cause, for the whole Anzac cause, let alone footy on that day, is pretty special. And I'm not necessarily one to hand over feature events, feature cards to clubs specifically, but I think on this occasion, I wouldn't change it. They do a great job with it. And the fans come for it. I think it'd be different if it was, let's even say Hawthorn Geelong, it'd be a very different vibe. I mean, they've got their Easter Monday clash, but that'd be a very different vibe at the MCG on that day than it is with Essendon and Collingwood. So I'd leave that as is.
Oh, I agree with you. I think they absolutely deserve this day. The only thing I would look at is Fremantle, who I believe have done an outstanding job with their Len Hall tribute match. It was the 29th, but I wouldn't replace this game. What I would do is I would accept that maybe they can have the nightcap to Anzac Day. So you play your traditional Anzac Day game, and because Fremantle have done the day so well, they can have the night game in Perth. It does give you four teams for the crossover the next week. So when it's on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and it's a bit awkward, you have two teams that at least have the same short rest for their next
Yeah,
game.
no, that's a great call. And the Fremantle Footy Club have done a hell of a job. You're right, and it shouldn't be forgotten. I thought that was always going to be a bit of a natural order, I must admit. You play the Saturday afternoon, or sorry, the Anzac Day afternoon, Essendon Collingwood, and then you'd play the Anzac Day night, you know what I mean? With Fremantle and whoever. They can make that a little standalone feature for them. Might even be a, would you do a derby on Anzac Day, or is that just a waste of an opportunity to exploit the crowds on another day?
Yeah, I think probably a little wasted. I'd probably save that for another time. We didn't really speak about St Kilda's win because a key takeout out of that game was about the Arks' interference. But it was an important win for St Kilda, and that would have been my takeaway had not for the brouhaha around the Ark half.
101 points is a good win, and for Secure to kick 143 points is one of the challenges with from Saints fans that I know. They just always worried about being able to kick a score. Well, 143 points says they're able to kick a score, and that's pretty handy. The question's got to be about the opposition, and probably applies to Saturday's game at the G with Collingwood and Essendon too. The opposition were lackluster, they were limp. I mean, Essendon, particularly in the second half, were limp, and West Coast at no stage really looked any chance to compete in that contest for the four quarters or be able to compete for the four quarters. So that's a worry, I must admit. But for Saints fans, you're right. It's a very important win. They needed to win that and win it well, just to even, I reckon, for their own confidence to know that they can go into any game. And I know they compete really hard, and we've seen them a couple of times live this year at the grounds. And they do compete really hard. They play a really taxing game of footy, I reckon, with the congestion and then try and counter-attack in the back half. So that creates a lot of fatigue against good teams. And they lost that a couple of games being in front at half time. So that's a worry for St Kilda fans, I reckon. But to see what they did today against a really lackluster opposition, must be said, would give them some solace, despite the fact that they'd be expected to win that game by a margin.
Yeah, so the first time they've won by 100 points since 2015 half. Can you believe that?
Right.
The
Wow.
biggest win in the second coming of Ross Lyon as well, and they kicked 8 goals to zip in the fourth quarter. So they'll take a lot out of that. The other good news for Saints fans is that in the VFL today, and I know you're working on a TV coverage of the VFL, Max King got through, didn't play an awful lot of game time, but 4 disposals, 1 behind. But most importantly for Saints fans, he got through unscathed. And Ross Lyon did say during the week he wouldn't need much of a run-up. So he might be back in next week, Max King.
Well, it'd be, but you know what? If he hasn't played much time today, I'd be a bit worried about putting him back into the big time. Because even though you got the five on the bench, you can limit the minutes and manage him a little bit. I'm just not sure you'd want to be doing that too often or for too long at AFL level. I'd give him another game in the twos. They've got Carlton at Princes Park next week in the VFL, so that'd be an opportunity to maybe get a couple of grabs and fill his boots a couple of times, and then you get back in after a bit of confidence as well. But it could be the most pivotal player for any team in the competition, but we just don't know. We just don't know what impact he will bring to St Kilda if and when he gets fully fit and back into the AFL, because we just haven't seen it anywhere near often enough in the last 5 years.
Half the Brisbane Lions earlier on today won by 52 points over the Adelaide Crows, and it came on the back of a week of Chris Fagan questioning their defensive intent. To me, it still feels like their best is possibly still the best in the competition. Is that a fair takeaway?
I think it is. And I don't want to disrespect Sydney at the moment, the way they're playing, but I think even though probably haven't seen it too much this year, their best, I think you have to take them on trust a bit for what they've been able to do at the back end of the last couple of seasons, obviously winning the premierships. And they can put the foot down pretty quickly. I mean, that was 10 goals to 5, I think, in the second half against Adelaide today for that victory. And they look pretty comfortable all the way through, it must be said. But I think they have to be the team that all other 17 teams would think are still the biggest threat in the competition, despite the fact that Sydney are playing some outstanding footy. Hawthorn have proven that their start to the season gives them a chance to compete deep as well. I think Brisbane are the ones that every other club are looking at going, well, I still reckon the champs are here.
Yep. I said earlier today on radio that kind of reminds me, everyone used to say in the NBA in the 90s that all roads to the championship go through Chicago.
Got to go through Chicago.
You've got to go through Brisbane still in the AFL. It feels like, ironically, I mean our grand finals at the MCG, but you understand the point. Last night was massive for Josh Carr. It felt like against Geelong. It was my takeaway, yeah. And that's what we do on this Sunday night. We have our takeaways from games, was that was the best coaching performance of his young career. And the question that I took out of it as well, Half, is does it change your opinion on Geelong?
I must admit, I've been a bit sketchy on Geelong from the start of the season. I mean, they had that performance against Fremantle early where Fremantle owned that game and they came over the top and got the chockies at home, Geelong. But I haven't been convinced about Geelong from the start of the season. So what it did was just cement my indecision, if that makes any sense, Benny, about what they are capable of, because their best is pretty good. And I think with a really full lineup and playing at their absolute best, they're a threat for anyone. But they haven't been able to produce it consistently enough. And I had them, I think at the start of the season, I had them 7-9 sitting in that sort of bracket of the ladder in my preseason predictions. Nothing they've done so far would get me to change that. I wouldn't have them any higher on their wins or any lower on their losses. But I'll tell you, it was a bad loss. And the way it happened was pretty poor from a Geelong perspective. It's not the sort of performance we've seen from Geelong many times in the last decade, really. But to your initial point about Josh Carr, I mean, that's the biggest win of his career, no doubt. And to be able to do that to a team like Geelong, keeping to 65 points, is a huge feather in his cap and the intent of his players to really lift. And they've done that the last couple of weeks. I mean, they nearly beat Hawthorn last week at Docklands. They played really well on that occasion. And I've got no doubt that gave them great confidence to really get home in front of their faithful and take Geelong and put them to the sword, which is exactly what they did. Hats off to Josh Carr and his crew. That was an outstanding performance.
Oh, I thought it was a brilliant coaching performance. So some of the numbers for Josh Carr, 17 marks inside 50, which was just outstanding. And they only had 6 defensive half turnovers. So that is what clubs want. If you have 6 defensive half turnovers, that is the opposition causing 6 forward half turnovers, which clubs just prey on. Yep. I mean, I read in the book Inverting the Pyramid, which is about soccer tactics. Basically, they worked out in the early 20th century that the closer you turn the ball over to goal, the less likely you are to turn it over before you score. So that still holds true in Aussie rules football, doesn't it, Half? Clubs love forward half turnovers, and Port were able to not commit them, which just set them up brilliantly. And Horn Francis was enormous, 34 disposals, 2 goals, 12 clearances. Mitch Georgiades, 10 shots on goal for 4 majors. I mean, it could have been a lot bigger. And what about Jack Watkins, Half? Did you see this? Played on Friday.
What did I say?
In the SANFL, 25 disposals and a goal. And then he backed up on Saturday night because of a late withdrawal. 2 games
in
26 hours.
Well, we've seen that a few times in the last couple of years. I mean, wasn't that the way Logan Morris was introduced to AFL footy as well? He played in the 2s and then had a couple of burgers along the way and then found himself in the 1s?
Yep. Which was, that was my standard preparation for a game.
It's happened a couple of times in recent years. And we talk a lot about player management and loads and work rate and all that sort of stuff. I don't think, every now and then, a little back up the racehorse 7 days later, 3 days later, like some trainers do across the country. It's never a bad thing for the athlete. The thing that caught my eye was they were plus 18 from clearances, Port Adelaide, and plus 8, I think, out of centre bounce. And this is against a really strong midfield brigade from the Cats. That said a fair bit to me. Ended up with, you know, plus 23 inside 50s, kept Geelong to 35 inside 50s. I mean, that's an extraordinary number to keep Geelong to, considering their firepower and their run through the middle of the ground. So I'm not sure if the Name of Game DVD business is still on, but I reckon Josh Carr might buy one of those DVDs and just have it in his collection forever.
Yeah, and we'll keep a watch on the Blitzarves injury out of that game as well. So hopefully he's okay. Saturday night, I watched a lot of Fremantle and Carlton. I mean, I watched pretty much all of these games, but I was locked into this one last night. And Shea Bolton is in career form half. So in his career, he's had six games with 30 disposals or more. He's had three of them this year at Fremantle, and he's exactly the X factor that they needed.
Yep, spot on. 33, 2 goals, 2, 11 contested. He was everywhere, Shea Bolton. And, you know, I mean, that's why they get him. That's why they try to recruit him and pay the price they needed to get him over, because he's a game separator. He can win games for you, or certainly be the difference in tight games. And he was extraordinary last night. And absolutely cemented why they would go and chase him and hunt him and to be a part of this team. It sort of lends itself to the way this Fremantle team this year have tried to be a bit more aggressive, I reckon, with their play, and perhaps coming back to the laws changes that suit some teams, that Fremantle have been the beneficiary of that with some of the talent on their list and some of the X factor that are having a real influence in this campaign so far. I mean, they're sitting next second on the ladder at the moment, depending on the percentage. So they're really humming at the moment. And when you've got a guy like Bolton, who is really feeling it and has been encouraged to play with the flair that he's always shown, well, certainly when he was at the Tigers, then I think you get really good buy-in from him and you get trust from his teammates because he's going out there and doing the job. So, yeah, brilliant stuff from him. Fremantle trucking nicely too, just by the way, probably overlooked them before in the conversation about the best teams in the comp. They are trucking very, very nicely.
Yeah, and a goal of the year contender from Luke Jackson out of the middle. He did it twice, but one of them was just marginally better than the other. A takeaway from way back on Thursday night, the Bulldogs in Sydney, I think we're all just grateful that Aaron Norton is okay. That was a frightening moment for all and sundry at the ground for a little while there. I also just want to give a quick shout out to Max Gawn, someone I know you know really well, half, but here's a little bit of what Max Gawn had to say on AFL Saturday yesterday when he was on air with you.
Yeah, I appreciate the AFL and the AFLPA going quickly on this yesterday afternoon. I think it was an embarrassing day for the players for, what, roughly 6-7 hours while we had to stand behind that message that the appeals board gave out. So I'm glad of our bodies of the AFL and AFLPA that have come out and said we don't stand behind that. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know. I heard you guys talking before. How many weeks is too many weeks? Is weeks? I've never been suspended, so I don't know if weeks is actually something that really would affect me. So I don't know if that's the way to go. I don't know what that is and what that looks like, but I certainly know that the game is not that hard that I can keep my mouth shut when it comes to homophobic and racist and other vilifications. I'm well aware that that is not the place for it. And yeah, I was sort of embarrassed when I was reading that stuff from the appeals board yesterday morning.
So Darcy Moore came on after that and spoke very well about it as well, saying that those comments were deeply concerning from the appeals board. Oh, I just want to say, Max Gawn, very quickly as we go out here, half, what a champion. 8-time All-Australian, likely a 9-time. One of the great fourth quarter players we've ever seen. He's a premiership captain.
The best.
Yep. He always speaks. He can be serious and honest when required, self-deprecating and humorous when appropriate. He's always available in the difficult times, and he did a lot of that after 21 when they went out in straight sets multiple times. I just think this guy deserves a massive bouquet for what a champion he's been on field and off field.
No, well said, Benny. He's a, you know, he's become, and I never thought I'd say this about Max, working with him through his earlier days. He's become a statesman of the game.
He has.
And he's got the respect of the entire football community, not only because of the way he plays, but a bit like Darcy Moore, the way he carries himself, the way he represents his himself, his club, his game, certainly his cohort. And the way he stood up yesterday was the absolutely the right response to, by the way. I was really pleased that he came out and said it, because that was the right response from the right person at the right time. And Darcy Moore followed up beautifully as well, because it was an extraordinary summary of the judgment of the appeals Tribunal the other day. Everyone in the world who read that thing, hang on a second, how the hell does this go to print, let alone be allowed to be signed off on by the AFL, who had, on the Thursday night, they signed off and said that the matter is closed, the case is closed, and they came out after the hoo-ha and revisited it, which was disappointing itself, I reckon, from the AFL's perspective. But at least they had the guts to backtrack and say, no, we got that wrong, to try and sign off on that. This is unacceptable. The implication that it gave about the players and the way they carry themselves, let alone what we stand for as a code. And then they've parted ways with the KC, who was the chairman of the appeals board, which was a difficult thing to do, I'm sure, but it was the right thing to do. So I tip my hat to headquarters for making that happen, because that was the right thing to do. We couldn't have that being the leader of the appeals board with that sentiment.
Half, great job as always. I've got some new exciting segments like glass half full, glass half empty to introduce as we move through. But I love your work as always. Great job.
Go get them. All the best.
This has been the ABC AFL Daily Podcast.